much for inviting me. It's great to come back to Banff. It has been a long time. Today I will talk about some recent work about momentum polarization, which is some measure I want to propose, which measures the central charge and the topological spin of a topologically ordered state. And you will see this is also kind of related to these discussions about how viscosity and modular transformation. So this is the work is on archive. This is in collaboration with Hong Hao Tu and Yi Zhang, two Brazilian and postdocs. And, one is in Stanford, one is in Max Planck Institute. So the outline is I will briefly talk about topological ordered states, although it's almost not necessary. I will introduce what I mean by this momentum polarization, and then basically I will discuss two aspects. So from some analytical results based on the Eddy-State conformal field theory, we expect some formula that tells us how to read the spin and the central charge from momentum polarization. And then we talk about some numerical results, which seem even better than we expect from the analytical results. So we have heard a lot about these. So we have topological states, which are different from trivial states, but they're not all of them are topologically ordered. Some of them are distinct from trivial states, but they don't have non-trivial ground state degeneracy. So only these which has the ground state degeneracy, they are topologically ordered in the sense that they can have fractional particles. They can have particle with fractional charge and fractional statistics. So for example, fractional quantum Hall states. So these topologically ordered states, there is a lot of discussions about how do you describe them. So because everything is topological, you don't need to care about like the distance between particles and so on. You just care about the topology, like I wind a particle around each other, or I move particles on a different manifold. This kind of topological information, and then for each given manifold with some number of particles on it, then I define a Hilbert space with some finite number of degeneracy, and then when I move these particles around. So we know there is this fusion and braiding defined. I mean, these are all well known, but I want to review it in this way so you see that actually the spin is a quite useful concept. Because everything is topological, so when you have two particles far from you, you actually don't know whether it's two particles or one particle. So that's why you can talk about fusion rule, that two particles can be fused to a third one. And then when you braid particles, for the same reason you can talk about braiding, because when you take two particles far from you, when you braid them to each other, then from far away the particle type won't change. So the only thing it can change is a phase. So that's why the braiding can be described by a phase, which is just a U1 phase when you fix the fission channel. And then that phase again is related to the spin of the particle, because when you look from far away, you don't know whether there are two particles winding around each other or it's just the fusion particle C, which is spinning around itself. So that's why actually there is a nice relation between the braiding phase and the spin of the particle. So basically, if you know the spin of each particle, which is a scalar in 2D, because there is only one direction you can spin, so then you know all the braiding phases. So basically, that's why spin is a very important quantity, and for example, so like in the simple Laughlin state, you have some spins which are fractional, q squared times 1 over m, and then there is this Ising theory which we will talk about later.
I mean, it doesn't mean that the non-abelian and abelian quasi particles are never point particles. I mean, they always have to have a frame.
You can think in that way that they know the spin structure of the underlying manifold.
Well, to regularize them in a field theory, you presumably have to endow them with a frame.
Yeah, somehow you have to split them, but I don't know how to make that precise. But at least from this purely topological discussion, you see why spin is well defined and why spin determines all the braiding, and so on. So basically, I mean, it's a well defined operation because it's basically like rotating this part of the space without rotating the space far away. And then, then another reason why this is interesting is that it's related to these modular transformations on torus or heterogeneous surfaces. So if you think about a torus, then this ground state degeneracy on the torus is labeled by the particle type in this loop. So in the Laughlin state case, you can just think about flux in a loop, which is like 0, 2 pi, and 4 pi, and then they give you you gradually spread flux and it run over different ground states. And then, so because everything is topological, you don't care how thick is this torus, so you just make it very thin, then it becomes a sphere with two punctures, with two particles, so A and A bar. So then you see that now what happened if I, so what is the operation on the torus that correspond to spin one particle without spin the other? That's actually the what is called a dent twist, that's a twist of the torus like this. So if you twist the torus like this, then the two particles, the A, these two A's both spin to the same direction. If you globally rotate the torus, then they spin to the opposite direction. So this is why that the spin phase determines the action, determines how the ground state transforms in the dent twist, which is this operation. And then, so far I have been talking about spin, and then there is another important thing, which is even less intuitive, that that's the chiral center charge of the eddy states. So basically, when you have a chiral eddy state, then you have a energy current which is independent from the detail of the velocity and so on. Naively, it's because the density state is reversely proportional to velocity. So if, when you multiply energy with velocity, then they cancel out. So the energy current is universal, and there is a coefficient which is the center charge. So the center charge also appears in these modular transformations on a modular 24. So when you consider S and T transformations, then the physical system doesn't carry a linear representation of that, but a projective representation. And this C over 24 labels the phase, like what you heard from Lucas. That kind of
Sorry?
Is a modular transformation what of the complex?
The torus, there is this S and T transformation. So there is some equation like ST to the power 3 equals
yes.
1, but it's not 1 in the physical system.
For the approach has been introduced mod 8, I mean, the defined mod 8.
For what? Central charge?
Yeah, in terms of topological spins.
I thought it appeared in modular transformation that C over 24, which we will see later. We'll see in the T transformation, C over 24. Okay, so basically this is a review, and then the question is how do we measure the H and C? So actually, when did I start?
You started at 10:02.
Okay, so thanks. So basically, there are for this ideal system, when you know the fusion rule and braiding, of course, you can write down these states algebraically, or you can for fractional quantum Hall wave functions, there are ways to calculate them analytically because these wave functions are very ideal, and they are, for example, you can use the property that they are correlation functions of modular of conformal field theory. But then for more generic models, it's generally difficult. There are some numerical results on Kadaev model, and then there are some numerical results recently from Ashwin and Ashwin's group about the fractional chain insulators. So you can some Laughlin states. So and non-Abelian states. So you can do some modular transformation, really rotating two directions to calculate the aspect. So basically here, what we want to propose is a new way, which seems to be much simpler numerically than these, for example, this one and this one. Okay, so the idea is very simple, that you just twist the cylinder. So basically, let's first consider a global translation of a cylinder. So if I have a cylinder like this with a topological state, then there are different topological sectors labeled by the particle type in this loop. And then for a given particle type, this spin is basically the phase you obtain when you rotate the cylinder. So when you rotate the cylinder, it's the same as rotating these two particles, spinning these two particles to opposite directions. So each will give you a phase which is determined by the spin, but the other one will give you the opposite spin, which cancel each other. So if I don't want to cancel, if I want to avoid this cancellation, then apparently the easiest thing to do is I twist only one side without twisting the other side. So I kind of I'm only doing translation to the one boundary. So I'm measuring the momentum here. I don't measure momentum on the other edge. So now, intuitively, that's how that should work. And this is also related to this 1D results from Lucas and Alexei and also Ari Turner and Ares et al. So basically, they show that in 1D, this topological state is classified by the projective representation carried by the edge state, like a fractional charge carried by edge states. So here you can view this cylinder as a 1D system, and then this translation symmetry is like a Zn symmetry, in internal Zn symmetry. Then this edge momentum is actually this edge momentum, which is labeled by the spin h, is actually a fractional charge in the Zn. Although this analogy doesn't work further because you don't really have a natural classification of Zn topological states in 1D. So a priori, there is no, I mean, if you just use this analogy, there is no reason why the spins should be quantized. But they are indeed some phase in the Zn projective representation. It's just we haven't seen the reason why it's quantized. Okay, so then the difficulty is we don't know how to twist the lattice system continuously. So we can't really do this. I mean, you can do that, but I cannot really compare that with the original system. But so I just do a simple mind thing, then we just consider a discrete twist. So we cut the system in the middle, and then we twist the left side by one lattice constant. So this is a well-defined unitary transformation. This is the operator T by L, which just means, say, if you expand your spin wave function into a spin up-down basis, then translate the T by L just mean I just move all the spin configuration in the left by one lattice constant.
Do you
keep it
right. Do this algebraically or?
No, it's an operator. It's a unitary operation which simply take your whatever spin configuration translated by one half and keep the right side in your environment. So this is a well-defined mapping in my Hilbert space, which is unitary.
By one lattice constant.
Yeah. So it's kind of adiabatic. You want to do it slowly. So adiabatic. But it's not really adiabatic because there is something happening in the middle. Okay, so the take-home message is this formula, which is that, okay, so naively I want to say when you do this translation, then it only acts on the left edge, so it gives me this barrier phase, which is the spin. But that's not really true. Because you do something violent in the middle. So you actually, when you calculate the overlap with the original state, you not only get the phase, but you get an exponentially small real part. So that because the middle part, so the overlap is very small, you create a lot of excitations. But the key thing is that indeed you have this universal part from the left edge, which is h minus sin c over 24, which is what you expect from the edge state. And then you have a correction to it, which is not universal, but you know the form. It's a proportion to length. It's an area law, and it's independent. It's very important that it's independent from the topological sector. So if you do it for each different sector, it's the same. So this is the take-home message.
The alpha is not universal, is it?
Universal? Alpha is not universal, although it may be also physically meaningful. So, okay. So then I guess I need to speed that up a little. Okay, so basically, this quantity is like an average value of a unitary operator, and this is actually something related to entanglement because you are translating only half of the system, so the other half doesn't evolve. So when you calculate the average value, you can actually calculate it in the density matrix, reduced density matrix of the left edge, and then the left half cylinder. Then the nice thing is that when you look at the left half cylinder, then TY is just a global translation. So what you are doing is you take the reduced density matrix and you are calculating the average momentum in that. Okay, and then, so of course we don't know what is the form of the reduced density matrix, but we know some information about it. So it's pioneered by Duncan So when you look at the entanglement between, say, between two parts of the system, like a quantum Hall state, then the entanglement spectrum looks like the IDC spectrum. You heard that from Duncan yesterday. So then there are a lot of numerical and analytical results in different systems, including like a Kitano model, free fermion, and quantum Hall systems. And then we here I will briefly show argument, a kind of proof we have in this paper with I collaborated with Hoshio Katsura and Andreas Ludwig 2 years ago. So basically, explain why this is true. And the real density matrix is like a thermal density matrix of the ID states. Basically, you can think of the cylinder as like two cylinders glued together. Glue means you introduce a coupling between the two parts. So you start from two separate cylinders and introduce a coupling between them. And then you can gradually turn on the coupling and then look at the small coupling. And we have a small coupling, then it's like only the edge states are coupled. The box states are gapped, so the coupling is small, then they don't couple each other much. So then you can focus on this problem, which is like a CFT with the relevant perturbation. So you write down the edge states, which is a CFT, but the left mover and right mover actually live on two different physical systems. And then you look at the coupling between them. And the nice thing is that because CFT is so, because the conformal symmetry is so large, then when you turn on this kind of coupling, as long as you know this coupling leads to a gap, then you almost know what it looks like in the long wavelength limit. Because everything which is gapped looks like infinite gap when you look at long wavelengths. And the infinite gap state is kind of determined in the CFT if you fix the topological sector. So that's this state. So this is like the state which is like a maximally entangled state and then cool down a little bit. So from that, you see that the reduced density matrix should look like the thermal density matrix. And the temperature, the entanglement temperature, so H is the conformal field theory Hamiltonian for the eddy state. Now, if you take the velocity to be 1, let's take the velocity to be 1, so H is just the momentum, then the tau has a dimension of length. It's actually the correlation length of the system. It's like an inverse gap.
Can you say again, what were you... say that it's a maximally entangled state?
No, I mean, if you take tau 0 equal to 0, this is the maximally entangled state. It means every state moving to the left is entangled with the right. So the reason why we know this long wavelength behavior of this entanglement between left and right mover is that in the long wavelength limit, if you really go to the limit of infinite system, then all the gapped states in CFT look like a maximally entangled state. That's called the Ishibashi state. And then that's kind of the fixed point. And then your physical system, you have to introduce a gap size, which is like you are close to the fixed point, but a little bit away. Then you introduce this term, which is like RG flow away from that fixed point, basically. And the RG flow is the same as the Hamiltonian. So basically the picture is that this edge entangled with this edge, which results in a finite temperature when you look at the reduced density matrix. But then we also need to think about the other two edges in the physical boundary. And what happens is you can just think that as the same way as here, but you turn off the coupling, right? You make the coupling very small. So if you turn off the coupling, then the entanglement temperature will go to 0. So the conclusion of this analysis is that the reduced density matrix looks like some thermal density matrix of this topological system, but the left and right edge has different temperature. The left edge has 0 temperature, and the right edge has finite temperature because the right entangled with the other side. So once you have this observation, so which comes here, then it's straightforward to calculate this momentum average value, which is like separated into the momentum average value in two CFTs, and one CFT is in 0 temperature, the other is in high temperature. So we consider the limit where the Ly is large enough, so that so it's larger than this temperature, the inverse temperature. Then the high temperature, you can do a modular transformation to transform it into low temperature. So basically, the result is you will get this formula where the left side is just the ground state momentum of the CFT, and the right side is like a finite temperature momentum average value of the right mover in the CFT. So the really interesting thing is that if you see, so there's a picture Duncan drew yesterday, so you have this many states in your entanglement spectrum, and then so if your entanglement temperature is 0, then you look at the ground state. So the ground state has an energy, has a momentum shift. So shift like this, which is fractional number away from the integer. So the local excitation should have integer times 2 pi over L1. But then all these excited states should be like an integer plus this fractional value. But when you have a finite temperature average, they finally wash out this fractional part and gives you only this linear area law. And that's the key why we can separate this from this, because we can just fit this formula. It's like a topological entropy. You have a subleading term, it's universal. Okay, so we started to verify this formula, we started two systems numerically. So we want to, because the argument of based on CRT should only work in the long wavelength limit, we don't know how good it works in the lattice models. So we started numerically two models. One is the Kitaev model. So the Kitaev model, we know there is it's a spin model, and then you can map it to Majorana fermions and then you can solve it. And there is a non-Abelian phase. So I will skip the details. Basically, you map this model into a Majorana fermion coupled to a Z2 gauge field. And then when you do a translation, you can show that this twist, this partial translation, is equivalent to translate the fermion, but in a gauge covariant way. It's like a magnetic translation in the Landau level problem.
Which phase do you tune the
model? I'm interested in the non-Abelian phase, but this works in any phase. That you just twist, and then what happens is you need to do a twist and also associate a gauge transformation to it. Say if you have a line where the hopping is minus one, then you need to move that line, otherwise it's not translating around. Okay, so because we know the structure of reduced density matrix, so this is the work of Hong Yao and me did, then you can basically reduce everything into a free fermion problem. And then, so what are the topological sectors? The topological sectors are determined by the flux in this circle. So the Z2 flux, if the Z2 flux is pi, then the edge state has no zero mode. So we are in one of these Abelian sectors. So depending on the fermion occupation, you have in the one sector or psi sector. And then if you have a zero mode, then it's Majorana, the Majorana zero mode, the sigma sector. So now we can calculate the spin for each of them. And this one actually you don't need to calculate, because it's in terms of fermion, it's a local excitation. You already know the momentum is half integer. Spin is 1/2, because the momentum of the fermion is 1/2 plus the integer times 2 pi over L. So we just focus on the sigma sector. And then this is a formula for the free fermion, so you can calculate the entanglement spectrum of free fermion, and then really just calculate the reduced density matrix. It's like a ratio of a partition function with the original temperature and a partition function with the imaginary part of the temperature.
What is the
H? H is the entanglement Hamiltonian. Like you trace over it, right? You get a free fermion entanglement Hamiltonian. And then this IP is like a term you add to the entanglement Hamiltonian, which is a diagonal operator, the momentum operator. And then you see that this equation actually preserves the periodicity of P, which is kind of one of the puzzles I want to that motivates this work, because we can't really write down a local formula for the momentum density, because the momentum itself is defined in model 2 pi. But in this way, you see you don't need to worry about that. Okay, so you see, so we can just calculate the spin and then also the central charge. So you see they converge exponentially to the results, to the quantized results, 1/16 and 1/2. And then, so you can also check that when you change the parameters and go to a trivial phase, then indeed the spin goes to zero. In the other, the other side is a torical phase.
So you get the same result for all the non-Abelian phases.
What same?
There is only one type of non-Abelian phase.
There is only one non-Abelian phase, yeah. And there is a Abelian phase which is a toric-code, and toric-code has E and M particle, which are bosons, so spin is zero. And then the non-trivial thing is that, okay, because it's a free fermion, we can tune it, and then we can try to ask, okay, what happens if the edge theory is completely not a CFT, so that the analytical result just doesn't work. Okay, so I can tune the edge theory to be quartic dispersion rather than linear. That's always possible. I mean, what matters here is not the physical edge state, it's the entanglement edge state. So if you look at the entanglement spectrum, and actually in the Kitaev model, if I remove this second neighbor couplings on the boundary between the two parts of the cylinder, then the dispersion becomes called cubic. And so my analytical, so this analytical result in CFT doesn't hold anymore. It's not a CFT. But numerically, you see it's still quantized in the same way, very nicely. Okay. So then the other system we studied is the fractional chain insulators. I have two slides. So basically, it's like a lattice model of lattice version of fractional quantum Hall, and you have heard talks about this earlier. And so you can describe these states by projective wave function. It basically means you can take a Parham wave function of a slate determinant wave function for each Parham, and then you just project to the state where the two Parhams are attached to each other. And then you can study this by variational Monte Carlo. And the nice thing is that the TY can be easily calculated by variational Monte Carlo because you really deal with the real space configuration, and then you just do a translation and then calculate the overlap with the original state. And then, you can also write down what are these two boundary, what are these two topological sectors. So we do it for one half, there are two topological sectors. And then, so this is already in the paper of Yijiang and Ashwin. The definition of the topological sector is already in their paper. And then we calculate the TY, and you see, indeed, it scales very well with this formula. So this is the scaling of theta times L, scale with Ly square. So the slope is the non-universal term, and the intercept is the universal term. And then you get spin and center charge in order to good accuracy. Okay, so in summary, this is the formula that it should work for other systems beyond this, including, for example, matrix product states from Max Zalatel et al. And you have heard from Andre's talk earlier that you have this MPS representation of quantum Hall, and this seems also to be very suitable for this. So, and the open question is how do I understand it? Why does it work beyond the CFT limit? Okay, thanks.
So is the alpha 2L, what I was talking about yesterday, the length measured using the whole viscosity of the metal?
Yeah, it seems so. So that's what we are thinking now. And so Max Zalatel and Taylor and I were trying to also think about this. So the that's a momentum which is scaled with the system. That's an angular momentum which scales with the system size.
Yeah.
And probably when you consider torus rather than cylinder, the universal term cancels out, and then only that term then.
Use that on a spin liquid?
Yeah.
How's that?
Variational Monte Carlo. If you have a variational wave function, then you can check that. I mean, in principle, this is different. This can be done generally.
So let's say an RVB wave function, can you check it?
Not yet. But this fractional chain insulator wave function is actually the same as the Carroll spin liquid. If you view the Hartree boson, nu equal to 1/2 as a spin liquid.
Okay, but it's Carroll spin.
It's Carroll spin, yeah. But we have to do something for topologically ordered state. So.
Well, no, you can have not a Carroll, it's just an RVB is also topologically ordered, right? Z2. It's related to this constant in the entanglement entropy.
I don't know. Is there a model which gives me a gapped spin liquid which is not Carroll? I mean, maybe quantum Denver model.
Well, for the Carbomet, it's been balanced and so on.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I'm hoping to check that, but that one is obtained by DMRG,
right.
And we are still trying to figure out how to really use it, how to do this on the DMRG.
What's the problem with the states we get from DMRG? I mean, you need some representation of the ground state, right?
But in DMRG, basically, you truncate the space, right? And you don't want to have an operator which involves many sites. This one involves many sites. But it seems possible with some tricks, because intrinsically, DMRG is the MPS.
Any further questions? Okay, let's thank Shannon. So we'll start the next talk, I think, at 8:30.